Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo, and I'll be your host. The segment you're about to hear originally ran as part of Comic Geek Speak episode 207, which was originally released on December 7th, 2006.
Live from Texas, it's John Mayo with the Mayo Report.
Hey, John.
Hey.
Welcome back.
Hey, John.
Thank you. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're just peachy.
So, did you get any of that snow last week?
No, we didn't.
Because I thought it was kind of funny that Texas got snow and Pennsylvania still hasn't gotten any snow.
Yeah, and
snow
Pennsylvania
yet.
Was in the 70s.
Yeah.
But you see, I live in the part of Texas that doesn't get the snow. I may have been insane to move back to Texas, but I'm not flat out crazy.
All right, so what do you got for us this month, Johnny boy?
I got numbers for October. Where do you guys want to start?
At the top.
At the top? Okay.
I don't know. I'm just, saying whatever.
I got a quick question before we get started. I saw on your notes there, for the top 300 from October versus September, if I read it correctly, there was a 7.75% drop of like 512,000 issues. Is that, read that correctly there, John?
You read that correctly.
What could have... Are we missing like
Civil War?
Is that what it is?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of ways to look at this, but definitely, you know, when you don't have things like Civil War and the other titles Marvel's delayed and stuff, I mean, that has a huge impact.
Okay. Because that was a huge number to drop for 1 month.
Not as bad as the previous month, though.
Really?
We've been, over the last, 2 months, going down. But, I mean, that's not uncommon this time of the year.
Okay.
You know, people are starting to get ready, for Christmas spending, that sort of thing. January, usually is a really bad month, too. It's one of those things, though, if you look at the bigger picture and take a step back and look at, say, from 2003 through, where we are in 2006, overall, the top 300 comics are trending up. Some months it's up a lot, some months it's down a lot, but the overall, trend line is sloping upward, which is good. But then you see months like this, which, things kind of, look like they may have tanked. But what I find, really ironic, of course, is overall things are up, individual titles, by and large, trending down.
Interesting.
And, of course, Civil War and 52 titles like that really play into that. You have a comic come out that's selling, 100,000 every issue, and doing so weekly, or, in Civil War's case, doing much better than that, but much less frequent than that. It really skews the numbers.
So, what's on your hit list?
Let's see, we could start, if you want to start, do you want to start at the top, or are you just joking?
Well, we can start wherever you want to start. This is your show, man.
This is my show. Well, get the hell out. No, just kidding. I want to start with actually rank 188. This is a title that's been getting quite a bit of discussion, more about the creator than the title.
Bob Queen Volume 2.
We just talked about that last issue. Last issue.
Issue 1.
Well, this is the first issue of the second volume. It sold 5,900 copies. That's better than any issue of the previous volume. Volume 1, number 1, sold 4,200 copies. Number 2 sold 3,000. Number 3 sold 3,400. Number 4 sold 3,500. The one shot with Bomb Queen versus Blacklight sold 5,100. Trade paperback of volume 1 sold about 1,800. But if you look just at Bomb Queen and the monthlies, and ignore the trade for a minute, it sold a total of 25,100 units or thereabouts, including this first issue of the second volume. So I want to paraphrase Jimmy Robinson for just a sec, and it's clear what the problem is. You're not buying enough comics. Specifically, not enough of this one. So everyone, mortgage your houses, go buy up the print run. I think we can save the industry here.
Wow, little Mayo sarcasm.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I feel bad when I see a title that, you know, is a fun title, it's a good title and stuff, and, you know, it's selling under 6,000 copies, and that's the best it's done. You know, where the hell have the comic book readers gone? You know, the question is, are we not selling enough copies? Are we not getting enough new readers? Or can titles just not sustain readers month after month? That doesn't seem to be the case here, because with the exception of the drop between issues 1 and 2 of the first volume, this thing's been, you know, going up every issue and had quite a bit of a jump with this new volume. But still, under 6,000 copies. Very depressing. Okay. Go to something a bit more uplifting then. Jump to rank number 19, Action Comics 844. This is the first one with Jeff Johns and Richard Donner. And it is, let's see, 78,800 copies, which is a jump up of 22,700 copies, or better than 40% gain.
Wow.
You know, this is the best gain we've seen for an ongoing title this month. And, you know, it's great to see that. I'm curious how long they're going to be able to sustain this, and I hope they can keep readers, particularly with all the Superman DVDs coming out and all that kind of stuff. Hopefully there'll be some, you know, transition there. Don't really expect it, but it would be nice.
DC should have been handing out a free copy of that to anyone who bought the Superman DVD.
Yeah.
You know, we were just talking, it goes back to your whole Bomb Queen thing, and what is the responsibility when it comes to marketing comics now, and
the lack thereof.
You know, DC, owned by Warner Brothers, made the Superman movie. Richard Donner, big deal with those DVDs. Why aren't they handing out Richard Donner comic books, you know?
I mean, I'll give you three names on whose responsibility that is. Paul Levitz, Joe Quesada, and Steve Geppi. The heads of Marvel, DC, and Diamond.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if those three could just simply agree to spend a little bit of money and do the equivalent of like a Got Comics campaign or something, you know, we could at least get word out that, you know, comics still exist. You know, go read them. They're good stuff.
You know, they could have even done, like Brian said, they could have put a coupon in for that comic, offered, you know, to overship the comics to each comic shop. And then when you bought that, you take the coupon into the comic shop, get that comic.
No, they should have just sent a crate of them to each Best Buy location, and when you walk up to buy it, you get it.
No,
just like they did that with other things.
Into the shop. I'd rather get them into the shop.
Yeah, but people aren't
going to
do that.
Well, but still,
that's not
going to
work.
Yeah.
You give them the free comic at Best Buy with a coupon for $5 off your comic book shop or something, and then maybe you'll get people to go in. But, you know, you're not. I don't think average Joe on the street who doesn't give a rip about comics is going to go try to find a copy just so he can save, you know, $3 on Action Comics. I don't. But, you know, that's another discussion.
Well, and all of that hinges on there being current movies to transition readers from. Hmm. And if we're going to be reliant on another medium to get people reading comics, to me that seems fundamentally flawed. I mean, they're telling great stories these days. They've got great creators and stuff on it. The comics ought to be able to stand on their own. So, where do we want to go from here?
How about Seven Soldiers number... one. The question I have on that is, I'm looking at your chart here, and there's a column for weeks late, and it says zero. Now, is that because of it was never originally solicited at all, or?
What I do is I base that on the last known solicitation date.
Okay. All right.
And this one got dropped and resolicited.
Okay.
So, yeah, is it really on time? Well, you know,
well,
that depends how you measure.
Yeah, because that's another big drop there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it sold, let's see, 41,300 copies compared to the Zero issue that's down 22,800 copies, or about a 35.5% drop. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a harsh drop. Mm-hmm. But, again, it's a bookend, and, I mean, this is such a unique case. Not only is it a bookend, but there were seven four-issue miniseries between those bookends. And I thought the various titles were so diverse in style and content and stuff. You know, I'm puzzled by why it all was under one umbrella. I mean, I kind of understand why it was, but I don't know. It just seemed kind of odd.
Here's what I want to talk about is Ultimate Spider-Man 101 with a drop of 40,000 copies.
Wow.
Now, I know that there's a lot of people who probably bought, you know, issue 100 who didn't buy issue 99, but I bet you that was also a real easy spot for people to say, I'm going to stop buying this title. I bought the first 100 copies, and okay, I'm ready to spend my money somewhere else now.
It's possible, but it was still about 3,000 units above 99.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, then I guess I'm wrong.
No, I'm not saying you're wrong.
No, I think it basically is, it's 100 was so overordered that when you compare 100 to 101, it just looks like a drop.
Yeah, yeah.
But maybe it's both. You know, maybe it's people who are dropping the title at 100, and then a whole bunch of people bought it and decided to keep buying it, which is why it evened out. Or maybe just the title's so good that no one dropped it, and they just keep reading it despite the number.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things that's so, you know, impossible to tell from these numbers is, you know, whether it's a net increase, decrease, or if it stays the same. The question is it the same readers? Are we cycling through readers? Are we gaining new readers? I mean, I'd much rather see a steady, solid base that comes back month after month and more people coming in. But, again, we've got no way of measuring that. You know, sell-through information wouldn't even help on this, unless it got down to, you know, uniquely tagging customers and stuff. And, of course, that's never going to happen.
They should let us volunteer for that.
Yeah.
Like the Nielsen ratings, you know? I want to be a Nielsen comic review, you know?
I would love to put such a system together and be happy to do it. But, you know, some of the hurdles on that are, you know, getting enough retailers to cooperate with that to have a big enough sampling to be worthwhile. You know, getting some help from Diamond would be nice. Whether they would want to do it or not, I don't know. I see so many benefits to the retailers and the readers in having that kind of, you know, be it an equivalent of Nielsen or BookScan or whatever for the comic market, that it's not even funny.
I just had the mental image when you said tagged of, like, people roaming through comic conventions, getting shot with a dart and waking up with a little tag on their body.
I would be all for that, too. You know, I'd even be willing to go, you know, with a gun out into the convention, you know. Here's some, you know, just, you know, tag them a few times. Get them out of the way. See people with a big thing on their ear, you know, that'd be funny.
Thin out the crowd a little bit, too.
Yeah.
John, what about Amazing Spider-Girl? We have issue zero. Which I guess, was that the first one from the new series, or?
It was, but it was kind of a recap of the previous series.
Okay, so what were this issue sold 27,000 plus. What was the, let's say, issue 99 or whatever of the Spider-Girl series?
Issue 99.
I mean, because I would assume that 100 probably had some bump or something. But...
Yeah, but it was up from 100, too. Let's see.
Oh, it did go up higher than 100? What?
Well, let's work our way backwards from issue number one of Amazing Spider-Girl. That sold 47,300. Issue zero of Amazing Spider-Girl, which again was the recap of the previous Spider-Girl series, sold 27,200. Issue 100, the final issue of Spider-Girl, sold 22,700.
Okay.
But 99 only sold 17,900 copies.
Wow.
And then it, you know, goes down from there as we go back in time to about issue 95. So at 95, it was doing 16,800 copies, thereabouts. So this is one that sees, you know, just a huge benefit from the relaunch. And I figured it would see some. I'm flabbergasted that it's, you know, over double what it had been doing. You know, actually closing in on what, nearly three times. Which is great. I mean, it's a good solid title. I will admit I was one of the people who, took the relaunch as, you know, since I needed to be cutting back on my spending, as an opportunity to get off the title.
Yeah, sometimes that backfires on them, you know, anniversary issues and relaunches make it easy for us to say, I'll stop there.
Yeah, well, I not only stopped getting that, but, you know, I've used it as an excuse to essentially back out of the whole MC2 universe, so I didn't get the Avengers Next miniseries either.
Uh-huh.
But I had to start making some cuts somewhere.
So you were that guy reading the MC2 universe?
Yes, I was. Prior to these cuts, I've got, like, the entire run.
So you were the guy that was demanding Spider-Girl come back?
No, I wasn't demanding anything.
Because I got to meet those people and stop them permanently. Because you demanded it. No, I didn't. I asked you to stop.
Well, you were demanding.
Yes.
You were demanding Spider-Girl, just, you know, not... Yeah.
A question I had for you, John, and we were going through previews, and we were looking at the new Wildstorm relaunch, and at the store, Lem and I were talking about it, and we were very disappointed at our sales. What was the overall reaction as far as sales goes to the Wildstorm relaunch?
I was shocked by how poorly it did. And I say that in terms of the raw units it did. If you look at some of the titles in comparison to the previous incarnations, it's really, you know, perplexing. Because, you know, again, these things did fairly poorly in some respects, but also did much, much better than the previous titles. One in particular was Gen 13, number one, which sold 47,500 units. And that's an increase of 35,100 units from issue 16 of the previous title. Now, granted, that previous title didn't star the Gen 13, you know, characters that, you know, we all are kind of expecting. So it's a bit of an anomaly there. But, I mean, to relaunch a title like Gen 13 and sell under 50,000 copies, I was very surprised by that.
But 47,000 copies is a lot of comics compared to so many other titles.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's certainly not, you know, panic mode, you know, gee, it's going to get canceled or anything. It could go to about half that and still be all right. But, again, this is one of the things that, you know, essentially helped launch Image Comics. Now, granted, you know, it's a very, very different market now than it was then. But, you know, I would have expected it to, you know, not necessarily break 100,000, but, you know, at least make an attempt at it. And I'm not trying to imply that the creative team didn't try, because, I mean, you know, I haven't read it. I'm sure it's great and whatnot, but I'm underwhelmed by how these titles relaunched. Now, the Worldstorm issue itself, Did that come out in October? Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, 74.
Yeah, 27,000 units. Now, isn't that like the linchpin of the whole relaunch?
Yeah, kind of.
Supposed to be, yeah.
Now, again, I'll admit I used the reboot of the Wildstorm universe as, you know, a rationale for cutting more titles. Which is, of course, why, you know, Sean gave me the copies of episode 100.
That's right.
Well, we're gonna give you a nickname hack slash here, pal. your titles are going faster than the trees in the Amazon.
Oh, okay, I'll freely admit that's the case. I've cut my ordering by over half.
Wow.
But my question for you is, how much did your stuff for the current previews total up to?
You mean the like November order that I just submitted?
The previews you guys just talked about.
Oh, I think it was like in $90.
Okay, mine's currently at about $270. Oh.
And you've cut in half?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So you see, when you guys are always saying, "Oh yeah, we buy everything," I'm thinking, No, you don't.
Well, between us, we buy a lot of stuff.
No, that's true. That's true.
See, we're pikers compared to you.
John, I got a question. Number 65 on the list, Mystery in Space number 2. That's a pretty huge drop there from issue 1. I know, you know, a lot of folks drop after issue 1, and I guess issue 1 had variant covers, but that's a huge drop. It's like 38%.
I was flabbergasted by that. Okay. Because I think this has no bearing on quality. I think it's an excellent title.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, some of Jim Starlin's best work in a while, certainly his best work at DC in, geez, who knows how long. Of course, hasn't been doing all that much for DC, I guess. But yeah, 38% drop or whatever, it's down 17,800 units. I always expect a second issue to drop. Mm-hmm. Usually, you know, a 10 or 20% drop, not uncommon. Once it starts going beyond 30, and this is approaching a 40% drop, mm-hmm. You know, I gotta wonder what the hell's going on. But this is more, to me, a failing of the structure of the direct market in so much as these orders were placed before, you know, the readers certainly, and probably before most retailers definitely, saw the first issue. So because of the cycle time between solicitation, ordering, and when things start, you know, being available to actually judge the quality on, that's part of why we see, you know, usually a second issue drop, sometimes a third issue drop as well, just because it's ordering sight unseen.
But there's always a chance of reorders, though, right?
Yeah, there is. Both, you know, advance reorders, you know, before the issue comes out, and then once it comes out, you know, reorder and stuff. But really, with this title in particular, and with any DC title, you know, it comes down to how many copies are available for reorder, and that comes down to, you know, what did Bob Wayne at DC, mm-hmm. you know, expect this title to do, you know, versus the orders he saw coming in, and, you know, how much leverage did he have, you know, at that time to either, you know, maybe print some extra copies or not, depending. Now, one of the things we've been seeing over the last few months, between 52, Civil War, 1 year later, is we've been seeing a lot of reorder activity in the top 300 comics list. This month we had, you know, 28 items on the list that were reorders, or thereabouts. So, you know, I'd like to think that, you know, now that Mystery in Space is out and people have read it, you know, and hopefully clamoring, hey, you know, get me another copy, or, you know, get a copy for me, whatever, that we'll see some reorder activity for this. But, you know, there's got to be copies there to have, or enough to generate a second printing. Because we're seeing some of that, too, these days. But, yeah, I was very surprised by that drop. Yeah.
Was there no Walking Dead this month?
There was no Walking Dead this month.
That's no fun. That's like the highlight of the episode is when we tracking Walking Dead, you know?
Damn that Kirkman. He should get off his butt and write more comics. He's not helping. No.
He's emulating his hero, Todd McFarlane.
Oh, boy. That's
he's spending too much time over at Marvel. That's what it is. I've been around Quesada. And you know, we want it good, not on time.
Wow, this is the all cynical episode of the Mayo Report.
John just got off the nasty train.
You know, if you look at the numbers for this month, and filter it down to just those that had an increase from issue to issue, there's like 27 copies. Or 27 comics, I mean, that fit that category. You know, so after looking at a list where everything is going down and stuff, it's hard for me not to get a little cynical about how things are doing in the industry.
Yeah, I'm with you there, man. I really, it's a really tough call. I mean, once you start, you know, you look at these numbers, you can understand the constant reboots and all that stuff because it, you know, every time it restarts, the numbers go up and then they start going back down again, but at least you get them higher than they were before, and it just, it makes sense from a business standpoint. But it really, and this, I guess this kind of comes full circle to the Jimmy Robinson thing is, you know, how can the industry promote comics so that some of these titles can gain in popularity based on their merits? I mean, we could all list 10 titles off the top of our heads that we think are absolutely fantastic reads that no one is reading and that everyone should be reading. And you know, but then the problem is you have Marvel and DC putting out so much product that's chewing up so much dollar market share. I mean, when you look at, you know, the top 10 comics or whatever, and you see, you know, Civil War titles, and you see 54 copies of 52. I mean, I applaud DC for putting out a weekly book and trying something new, but there's 100,000 people who are buying that, and that means they're not buying. That means that's, you know, 400,000 comics that aren't being, mm-hmm. you know, spread something out. Else.
Well, maybe not. I mean, we really don't know if that's eating into other sales or not. I mean, maybe it is, but you know,
well, I mean, I'm talking theoretically. You know, I mean,
in theory,
if 52
totally.
Wasn't there, you know, maybe they'd be spending something else. I don't know, but I'm just saying. And it's not. I mean, certainly that's Marvel and DC's game is to eat up as much of the market share as they can. But even within Marvel and DC titles, it sucks that, you know, even 52 is slipping every single issue, and it's just like, man, there's got to be some way to solidify some of these titles and build them up. You know, there needs to be more grassroots, there needs to be more something.
I think Marvel and DC and all the publishers need to switch their game plan a little. I think they've been going after new readers for far too long and far too aggressively at the expense of existing readers. And the fact that very, very few titles are doing any kind of a steady increase over time implies that, you know, maybe you're getting new readers, maybe you're not, but you're not keeping the ones you've got. Mm-hmm. If you can't keep readers, it doesn't do you any good to be getting new ones. Because yeah. They're not going to stick around. You've got no reason to believe they're going to stick around. You know, I mean, that's part of why, you know, I keep talking about Walking Dead. Is that's one that's got a very, very clear upward sales trend. And I'd be hard-pressed to name really any other title off the top of my head that's had that kind of, you know, constant upswing. I'm sure there's got to be one or two out there, but, you know, this month there's only about 27 to pick from, you know, for this month. And then, you know, how many had that last month?
Yeah, I'm going to echo what Brian said. To me, it just comes down to they're flooding the market. There's just too many new things that they're trying, that they're coming out with, and it's eating up the dollars. You know, the price point itself doesn't help. You know, at $3 a pop, you know, when, you know, now my average sale from, you know, even somebody buying four or five comics is, you know, $30. I was just thinking that the other day when I was ringing up some people, and they're only buying, like, at most six comics, and it's, you know, $40.
Yeah.
Wait a second. Good Lord, you know, no wonder there are only certain titles that are selling, and certain, and if the title doesn't grab you right away, that first issue, there just isn't enough dollars out there to keep you coming back, you know, to give it a chance to maybe catch its legs, and you know, to me, Flash is your biggest example of that. You know, maybe these guys are gonna, you know, could have pulled it out, but the way the market is right now, if DC wants to have a Flash book on the market, they can't take that chance that these guys are going to pull it out. Maybe if it was, you know, the market was back where we had $1.50 books was your average price, they could allow them a little extra time, you know, up to a year of maybe to get that audience. But right now, if you don't, there's so much product and so many other places to turn, you gotta, you know, make those drastic changes. And I just, I think the whole flooding of the market, and both are doing it. Both Marvel and DC are doing it. Really hurts, because that's another thing. Lem and I were having a discussion on his you know, theories on what he has to do as a retailer, and it's not good. It is not good to hear him say, "Well, I'm gonna order to sell out within a week, and maybe I'll reorder it." That's horrible to hear, but that's the way. I mean, you've seen the story. You know what he has as far as square footage. You know what he has, you know, as far as other products out there, and just to, you know, to keep his, you know, footing, he's going to have to do it. And I'll be honest with you, I can't argue that much with him. There were times when, you know, I would go to him and, you know, "Lem, you can't do this. You know, we're doing this, we're doing that," and I can't bring that argument to him anymore, because I see what each month he has to put out for comics. And even now he's trying, you know, he's trying like Ape Entertainment books, he's trying the Marcosia books. We're trying to get him to, you know, get other things, but then that takes away from what he can buy. So I'm, you know, I'll just go right back to it. It's flooding the market for me.
Well, yeah, I mean, Marvel and DC both had 85 items on the top 300 in October. Mm-hmm. Now, some of those were, you know, reorders. There were about 19 for Marvel and 7 for DC, but still, you know, 66 new items for Marvel and 78 new items for DC, that doesn't leave a whole lot of room left for other publishers.
Mm-hmm. I would really, it's a difficult question, but I would like to know how many people go into the comic store each week or each month or whatever with X dollars to spend and they spend it no matter what, or how many people go in and just pick off what they want to read. You know, like, I remember times when I was buying weekly at the shop and I would say, "Oh, excellent, it's only a 3-comic week." I didn't necessarily browse the shelf and look for 4 more comics to buy, because it was like, "Oh, this means I'm probably going to get hammered next week." So if there were fewer titles from Marvel or DC, would that have any effect on the other stuff? Because would you end up just being like, "Cool, it's only a 3-comic week"? I mean, maybe if it was every week was a 3-comic week, you'd sooner or later go, "Okay, I'll try this title, I'll try that title," but...
Yeah, that's, I would think that would be what I would do if that's the way I was doing it. If I was getting like 3 titles and I want more to read, I would go out and look. You know, if I was only getting 3 titles every week, I would say, okay, well, maybe let's see what's out there. Let's see, maybe I'll pick up a 4th title for this week. But right now, it's definitely that. There's no doubt in my mind that if, you know, the guy comes in and there's only 4 or 5 books in his slot for this week, and he normally gets 10 to 15, he's just maybe going to go quick browse over there and then get back and say, "Good, I only spent, you know, $12 when I normally spend 40.
Yeah, well, part of that is we've gotten to where there's been such a history of, you know, sometimes the last week of the month, all the books that would otherwise, you know, start to be deemed late and the publishers get penalized, those get all dumped out. You know, so you know, unfortunately, a very reasonable expectation for a reader to be thinking, you know, "My God, you know, if nothing came out this week, I am going to get slammed next time." I guess from the publisher perspective, I would be worried that if, you know, I were at Marvel and said, "Gee, you know, maybe we cut an X title or two," you know, are you really going to see a corresponding bump in the other titles to compensate for the lack of those sales or not?
Yeah, I don't think it's that simple. You know, I think it would take time to adjust the market. And the other thing that I think is an issue with this same topic is, and maybe it's just me looking through fond memories of my childhood, but I seem to recall a whole lot more, you know, in Marvel, a whole lot more cameo appearances by other characters in your books each month, and that kind of made you go, "Ooh, I like Doctor Strange. Maybe I should go read Doctor Strange." Or, "Ooh, I like The Thing, so maybe I should go read Fantastic Four." And it kind of encouraged you to play in their universe some more and try some new things. And now it's just like, I don't see that as much, I don't think, anyway.
No, I would.
So you end up
entirely
just staying in that title. Like, you just read Daredevil and no one else ever appears in Daredevil except for Daredevil characters, and so you don't read any other books besides Daredevil. And it might be a fantastic book, but you never branch out, and I think that happens too much. And that whole like inner marketing of let's market our, instead of having a giant crossover and use that to market the art of the books, let's, you know, use some fun storytelling that's less obvious, and let's build up genuine interest in the characters rather than a false interest and just tying into the storyline.
Well, it's funny because both that comment and the one, you know, Jamie had made earlier about, you know, people only having so many, you know, dollars to spend, and if the title doesn't grab them immediately, they're not going to stay with it. You know, the storytelling style we've got right now is so radically different than what was around, you know, 20, 25 years ago. You know, at that point, comics cost, what, 35 cents, 40 cents, or whatever. Every issue, you felt like you got a full story, a beginning, middle, and end of something. Not necessarily that there wasn't a bigger arc or whatever going on. You felt you got introduced to the characters. You felt you know what was going on. So you didn't feel like you got gypped for your money. And then, like you're saying now, you know, you got a sense for this bigger picture beyond just the one title you were doing. I think between those changes, the lack of the footnotes, the lack of the thought balloons, and some of the other, you know, stylistic changes we've seen, you know, I think it's had a very big cumulative effect. And, you know, I personally blame a lot of this on the editors, because to do what you're suggesting, Brian, of having cameo appearances, a sense of, you know, continuity within the narrative universe from Marvel and DC or Image or, you know, whatever companies, that requires a lot more coordination and work on the editor's part as well as the writer's part and artists as well. And, you know, I certainly think the creators out there and the editors out there today are capable of it. I don't know if they just aren't applying themselves, aren't being pushed to it, or maybe you're being actively told not to do that. But I think it's a major problem.
Yeah, I don't think there's an easy answer, but I would like to see something happen.
Well, I was going to say I think there is an easy answer, but you're right, there isn't. But I think if some of the editors and the creators would, you know, pick up some of the stuff that got them hooked on comics, you know, 20 years back or whatever, and try to figure out what was happening, what was being done in those comics in terms of storytelling style, in terms of marketing and things like that, just not being done today. You know, maybe there's something that can be learned there.
Yep. I guess to get back to the list, I was kind of looking at one that I had made mention of last month, the Amanda, and why can't I find it now? Anita Blake, Vampire Hunter, Guilty Pleasures. I was kind of surprised to see that low of a number. I thought it was going to be a little bit higher.
Yeah, that started out at 20,200.
Yeah.
That does seem fairly low. I got, you know, got nothing there. I got no clue.
No, I wanted to throw that out there because we had made, like, I thought that was going to be a really huge seller. It has been a solid seller for us at the store. It's we're getting people in who don't normally come in to buy comics to pick up that book, and a lot of the other people are also picking up, too.
I'm on that bandwagon.
You know, checking it out. So I'm going to be very interested to see what number two, the numbers for next month, were when, you know, number two numbers come out.
One thing to consider is this month, if you look at all the comics that had either number zero, of which there were two, or number one, which there were 48.
Wow.
A sixth of the list is essentially new stuff.
Hmm.
Now, granted, some of the number ones were reorders and crap like that, but still. I think that's part of why we're seeing so many number ones, you know, launching fairly poorly, or at least less than they might otherwise have done.
You know, this whole, you know, talk of all these number ones and everything, it almost makes me wonder if we shouldn't just remove the number from comics and just say what month it came out. Then you don't know if it's the first one or the 1,000th issue. It's just an issue of a comic. Just like my issue of, you know, Better Homes and Gardens doesn't have a number on it, you know, and lots of people buy that magazine or whatever. You know, like, I don't buy Better Homes and Gardens, but I'm just saying, you know, like they.
But if they leave you that cliffhanger on how to bake the meatloaf, you're going to want to get that next one to figure out how
well,
it
and
comes
how to make
out.
Those pine cone crafts. You know, they're important. But, you know, it's like, is that a potential problem solver? Because if number one sell more, and if you take that whole stigma of the number away, does it just invite people to come read your comics if they don't know that they're starting in the middle?
Well, it depends on how the comics are being written. Because I think right now we're seeing a lot of comics that do well on not only the first issue, but the first issue of a new story arc or a new creative team or something like that. Because if you come in anywhere else, you're going to get lost because the writer and the creative team isn't, you know, providing the information you need to follow the story. Because they're assuming you read the first chapter, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that goes towards the writing for the trades mentality versus writing for monthly comics. You know, and while I agree that flipping to, you know, month-year type designations versus issue numbers could help potentially, you know, as long as every issue could be somebody's first issue, that would work. We're just not seeing comics that way.
All right. Well, any last things you thought were worthy pointing out?
Just one minor thing. There was no issue of Batman this month. Batman is typically what Diamond uses as the barometer for everything else, and everything else is in terms of that. So they used Detective for the you know benchmark this month versus Batman. I just thought that was mildly interesting.
I did not know that.
That is weird. I did not know that. That is wacky, wild stuff.
The other thing...
Thank you, Ed.
...that you guys may find of mild interest. The issue of Captain America that's on the list this month...
We like wild, not mild. Sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You're not sorry.
It's my show, damn it.
Not what you said about a half hour ago.
I was lying.
Oh, okay.
Kiss his ass.
But Captain America number 23, mm-hmm. That had the statement of ownership for this year for Captain America, as does most of the titles that are coming out around this time of year. Because Marvel sends their stuff out through the U.S. Post Office, they have to every year put in a form they filled out that indicates, you know, how things are selling, what the print run is, that sort of a thing. And basically what that tells us is right now, using Captain America as a rough benchmark, I haven't had time to go through all the others. And quite frankly, I'm too lazy to do that. The direct market is accounting for roughly 90% of the overall sales for Captain America. This is pretty much in line with, you know, what I had expected and, you know, what other people, you know, use as kind of the conventional wisdom. It's actually probably more like 89% or whatever, but still. So anyone wondering, you know, how these numbers compare, you know, the direct market to the overall mass market, stuff like that, this is, you know, 9/10 of it, thereabouts.
Wow. Did you read that post that Chuck Satterley put down about what he thinks the future of the direct market is?
Oh, yeah. I found that very interesting. You know, his whole thought on, you know, Barnes & Noble or Borders basically deciding to open up a mini comic shop inside their store and, you know, take over the industry and stuff. You know, he's put that forward before and stuff. I agreed with it then. I agree with it now. If anything... The one thing I think he may have wrong is the amount of work that the bookstore would have to do on this. I think we're seeing a shift towards trade paperbacks that plays towards the bookstore strength versus the direct market retailers. And I don't mean that in a bad way because there are a lot of comic stores that do an excellent job carrying trades. However, most comic book stores... I think are dependent on the weekly influx of cash from New Comic Day. Most bookstores, and I could be totally wrong on this, but I don't think there's any particular day they're thinking, oh, my God, thank God the new stuff arrived, you know, we're saved sort of mentality.
I think if it's any day, it's Tuesdays, because that's when most of the new stuff comes out on books.
The only day that they're hurting is when they run out of cappuccino and espresso, because that's what hurts their bottom line right there. $4 slices of pie, you know.
The new material comes in on Tuesday. When did the people come in to go get that?
Yeah, yeah. It's with bookstores. It's not set like it is like a Wednesday for comics.
I mean, you can set your clock, you know, by when new comics come out, you know, based just on the traffic at comic stores. You know, I don't think you can do that at bookstores, and you know that gives them a certain, you know, stability and leverage over the comic market. But I found that thread on the forum fascinating. I think Chuck's got a lot of great ideas, great thoughts on the matter.
Oh, you know, how much that would change in book sales if they did that, and every Wednesday people started
flooding
in.
You're going to open up your potential audience.
Because I can't go
to a larger amount.
I can't go into a Barnes & Noble or a Borders without looking around for a good 20, 30 minutes.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, there's too much to look at.
And the other thing, and like you said, John, is it could change the face of comics in that bookstores like to deal with books. You know, aka trades, and so if they did kind of consume the whole comic book store ownership, you know, marketplace or whatever, that we could be seeing a whole lot more in the way of trades or anthologies or, you know, digests or whatever. That, you know, this whole discussion we've been having for a year and a half now, where will comics go?
Yeah,
if Barnes & Noble's was your neighborhood comic book store, there are going to be a whole lot of square-bound books coming out that, you know, whether or not they're monthly or whatever, there's going to be a shift in that, because that's the way they like to do business. They're used to getting those crates and they're putting them on the shelf with the spines facing out, and, you know.
Well, and it'll change the nature of the stories we're reading, too, because they want the equivalent of books, not the equivalent of big crossover events. So things like 52, things like Civil War, I mean, that wouldn't play out in something that's more of a trade paperback-based market.
I actually think 52 would work better than a Civil War, because that is of a type, an anthology, just a weekly story. But Civil War and Infinite Crisis, yeah, I don't think that would
fly. I disagree with you there. The only words I'm saying, I mean, 52 I think would work very well. But can you imagine the Civil War book? This is month whatever for Civil War, and then you had your Civil War story, you had your Amazing Spider-Man, your Fantastic Four, all your crossovers in that one book. So it would just be, this is my volume of Civil War, boom. And you have all the stories there. Nice big thick book for maybe $19.99.
If you did it that way, but I think you really have to have an even larger fundamental shift in the thought process behind comics for that to happen.
But this is what we're talking about. This is what he was saying about as far as like the digest size books and thickness of them rather than the flimsy pamphlet size that we have now.
And really, I mean, it's what I want. It's what I've been saying all along. Mm-hmm. I want to know exactly which one I should read in what order. Well, if I get my monthly Civil War book, I'm going to read them in the order that they're published in that book. I'm just going to start at page one and read to the end. But, and then I'm going to get Civil War the way they want me to read it, you know.
But that's more of a compilation of short stories kind of mentality for a book versus a novel, which is one story all the way through.
Right, but I think, again, it might be, like Jamie said, if it's Civil War number one, they're just going to have, you know, 200 pages of Civil War featuring some different characters. It's not necessarily going to be, this is Miss Marvel number 20, six,
they tell
or whatever.
The same story, they would just reformat it differently for that format.
So you wouldn't necessarily know that you were reading, you know, Heroes for Hire and Cable and Deadpool and Miss Marvel.
This would be the Heroes for Hire chapter, and then boom, you would have the story there. This would be your Miss Marvel chapter, boom.
Well, and again, that's at an age where there are no numbered books. It's just arcs of books.
Exactly.
Well, it becomes like the Star Trek book. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got a title, it's got what, you know, branch of the franchise it's with, or, you know, that sort of thing.
And it says one continuing story each book.
Well, I think Sentinels from Drumfish Productions is kind of a forward-thinking, you know, publishing model, and that's basically a series that's coming out in trades, but was written as if it were monthly issues. And not monthly issues written for a trade, either. but, you know, it's essentially an original content trade paperback. And until we start seeing Marvel and DC experimenting with that publishing model, you know, in skipping doing a miniseries and going straight to, you know, a trade compilation and stuff, we're not going to know how well they could shift to that kind of a publishing model.
Well, like I said, they'll shift to it real quick if Barnes & Noble opens up a comic shop inside their store.
Well, I wonder if they're not testing the waters over the last couple of years. Like the holiday season now, this year I didn't notice it, but the past couple they've had more specific Marvel stuff, especially in their stores only. Not so much DC, but and it's reprints of stuff, but still it's different.
Something
they didn't do
be
before.
Things like Fable's 1001 Nights of whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
you know, things of that nature, which are original content in the hardback or the trade paperback format. Because if the bookstores or, for whatever reason, the industry moves towards predominantly being based on the trades versus the monthlies, the publishers have to be able to produce the trades without having, you know, the money coming in on a routine basis from the monthly issues. And, you know, it's not a matter of, oh, the bookstores want it, therefore they'll shift. I mean, it's a bigger investment in content creation, in printing, all up front before you see any return on that. And this doesn't even get into would the bookstores want it to be returnable and, you know, things of that nature. You know, it changes the playing field so dramatically, it's not even funny.
Well, it I think it changes the playing field as far as, like, your ongoing titles, your Supermans, your Batmans, your detectives. But if you think about what DC is doing right now, they're pretty much doing that without doing it. They're bringing out, like, the OMAC miniseries for 6 issues, and, of course, to go into the trade. And if it sells well, then they're going to go in and do, you know, an ongoing OMAC series. And they could just go, rather than printing the 6 issues, they just come out with a trade right away.
But it's not just as simple as skipping the 6 issues, because to do that, they had to have budgeted up front
mm-hmm.
for all of that expense before seeing any money coming in or any indication of how it's going to spend.
Well, I know that. I mean, I realize what you're saying, but if that was the only way it was coming out, that's what they would probably be doing.
Yeah, I just see that things like the OMAC and the other, you know, limited series we're seeing right now and stuff, particularly from DC, but some with Marvel too. I see that almost as a blatant concession, you know, or admission that they're doing essentially what I like to refer to as skeet publishing.
Mm.
They're going to throw stuff out there and see what gets shot down. That doesn't work. They're going to throw another round out there, see what gets shot.
Well,
down.
And you know, I mean, I get kind of almost tired of hearing myself say it, but we've talked about it. They're going to fall into the whole manga way of doing things. Like, I was just in New York last weekend, and we went to that Japanese bookstore that's in Rockefeller Center, and I'm over at the magazine section, and there's a whole rack of those gigantic, fat, weekly manga books that ship that have, you know, little chapters of each of the stories with the little card at the end that you postcard, that you mail in, that says, I like, these are my top 5 favorites, and the one that gets the fewest votes gets kicked out and something new comes in. And then there was one that was, it came out once a month. This freaking thing was like the New York City White Pages phone book. It was so fat, you know, and it was monthly, and it's like, man, that's what they're going to do. If Borders and Barnes & Noble consume them and Marvel needs weekly cash to keep their cash flow going, you're just going to buy this big, fat weekly thing.
Maybe what they should be doing, both DC and Marvel, is putting together such a weekly, you know, phone book kind of a thing on cheap paper and whatnot, but sell it in Japan. Don't, you know, translate it, whatever, use it as a, hey, you guys want to learn English or whatever, you know, because, you know, I think there's a lot to be said for the way manga is created, produced, distributed, the whole business model, whatever. But it's a fundamentally different culture over there. Everybody reads. A lot of people have, you know, insane commutes on trains where they can read and stuff. And comics don't have the stigma over there that they have here. So aping the format of manga isn't enough. We should be, you know, attempting to tap into that kind of an audience that's already willing to read, you know, comic-type material.
You know, hey, I don't argue with that. I think that, you know, if you can get a couple million readers from Japan, then that's awesome.
Yeah, because then it doesn't really matter how stuff does over here, you know, if they've got enough to sustain.
Right, kind of like our manga sales kind of don't matter to them because they're already selling manga at the wazoo.
Yeah.
And by the way, that was the other thing. You know, you go to Barnes & Noble or whatever, and you think there's a lot of manga there. Let me tell you how much manga they had at this store. In the little digest size stuff that was only in Japanese, it was 20 times the amount that Barnes & Noble has. I mean, there were titles I never heard of. I mean, it was an unbelievable amount of comics that were being produced, and it just...
Oh, I believe it.
It just made me go, oh,
I
want to read Japanese.
I went to Tokyo on business about 10 years ago and had some time over the weekend, you know, to walk around town and stuff. And, I mean, you couldn't go but a block or two between finding, you know, some corner, you know, mom-and-pop, you know, 7-Eleven-ish kind of, not that it was a chain or whatever, but, you know, where you could get your drinks, your produce, you know, whatever. And they would have just this mountain of the manga trades or, you know, the phone book size stuff or whatever. I mean, if you were bored and wanted something to read and, you know, could read Japanese, which, of course, I could not, still can't and never will, but whatever, you had to go outside and walk about 30 feet and you could find something. You know, that's so different than how it is here. And they've got so much material because they've got a society of, you know, comparatively voracious readers. You know, we need to tap into that or teach Americans to read.
Yeah. One or the other.
Or both.
All right, Johnny boy. I guess that you know, takes us through the Mayo report for tonight.
Okay.
One thing I do want to just quick add, the one I'm going to watch for next month is Black Panther number 21. I'm curious to see what they do since that officially, unofficially, was a Civil War crossover, and when they do, they've sold out, and when they do the reprint, it's going to come with the Civil War banner on it. And I'm just kind of curious to see what it's going to do, what the reorder is going to be on that. So that's kind of what I'm watching.
Yeah. Remind me of that next month. I'll take a look into that.
And also one thing, John, you were right, I was wrong. On 52, as far as returnability, it was only up to a certain issue. We must have been just getting rid of those issues when I saw us tearing them and sending them back.
Oh, no.
So you were correct, everybody out there. John was right. I was wrong.
Well, thanks for following up on that. I just was having nightmares of, you know, more recent issues being, you know
mm-hmm.
stripped and, you know, shredded. It's like, oh, don't do that. So wrong.
Yeah.
But if you guys have anything else you want me to look at, you know, when I'm prepping the numbers for next month and stuff, you know, both you guys and listeners and whatever, you know, PM me, let me know. Always looking for, you know, interesting things to pull out of the numbers.
All right. Well, good night, John boy.
Okay.
And, of course, you can hear him and Chris from Collected Comics Library doing this same mail report with the graphic novels and trade paperback numbers.
Yeah, it should be should probably be out this week.
Up here on Walton's Mountain.
All right.
And that wraps up this syndicated episode of the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo, and I've been your host. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is podcast@comicbookpage.com. Thanks for listening.